So that's why I said we're a financial planning firm first that happens to do asset management, because you have to start with a plan.
Exactly.
You just can't go invest money and then you're going to end up being out of a job, not having any cash. And what are you doing? You're liquidating your 401k, your IRA, you're paying ridiculous tax rates for it because there wasn't really this stopgap put in place. So,
yeah. I think clients are sometimes surprised when they realize that, yeah, we don't even talk about like how we would invest your assets till the very end of the process because we don't have a plan yet. So we have to build that plan to figure out how the investments would even work in terms of riskiness, volatility.
Well, understanding their goals, their lifestyle needs.
Yeah. So investments are just kind of one tiny piece of that planning puzzle.
Welcome to Wiser Retirement Podcast, where we believe the best financial advice should always be conflict-free. I'm your host, Casey Smith. Today, I'm joined with Missy Beach, the world's best financial planner, and Andrew Pratt, the king of data.
Wow. King.
Wow.
King of data.
I don't know what my coronation was, but...
All right. So I thought it would be a great idea to have a topic on market concerns that are unlikely to happen, but I feel like even to get to that conversation, you have to start with things that were supposed to happen that didn't.
Oh, all the hype.
All the hype.
All the buildup.
Yeah. You know, I just, it's that time of year. I think we're going to talk about it on every podcast this year. We're entering this big political season and it's going to be nasty.
Yeah, I agree.
So there's going to be fear on both sides, gnashing of teeth, you know, to promote their candidate and why you shouldn't vote for the other person. And it's just going to be nasty. You know, I guess you guys saw Trump won the Iowa caucus by a landslide. And
DeSantis is gone.
DeSantis is gone. Haley's only remaining. And it's either CNN or MSNBC. You can Google it, but it was the white Christian that did this.
Oh, really? Oh, the evangelicals?
It's the white Christians that are causing all this.
Bad people now.
So I'm like, oh, God, we're victimizing the white Christians. This is awesome. it's not even July.
It's not going to be good.
This is not going to be good.
But the good thing is, if it comes down to Trump and Biden, neither one will debate. So, I mean, at least we won't have debates listen to.
I think that's un-American and very sad. But yeah.
Just more campaign ads.
just more campaign ads. So here we go, right? You've got Jamie Dimon at Davos. I don't really pay attention to Davos. It's just a bunch of like billionaires talking about how to save the world, and they're really talking about how to save themselves. Jamie Dimon had some interesting comments, basically along the lines of, hey, you know what? Maybe Trump's China policy wasn't that bad. Maybe growing the economy is not a bad idea. He gave him credit for NATO.
Really?
Which was actually done during his his first impeachment. They rewrote NATO. No one ever talks about that. It's going to be interesting when you have businessmen like that coming out, which I think was only one of two positive comments out of Davos that I read anyway.
Well, at least hindsight is, being a little factual in some cases.
Yeah, he was very factual, and he definitely didn't say he was a great guy. He didn't say that his tweets weren't childish. I mean...
Well, that's good.
Yeah, you know.
Factual.
Right.
But he just stuck to the economic facts. So I think if you look from an economic lens, the facts speak for themselves during that time period. But all the chaos around it, I don't know. Is it worth it? That's what voters have to decide, you know. So let's digress into the deep past. 1999.
Oh, yeah. Prince.
I was younger.
Yeah.
Back then in 1999.
We all were.
The book, Dow 36,000. James Glassman, Kevin Hassett predicted the Dow Jones Industrial Average would reach 36,000 points by the early 2000s. This was this prediction was made during the dot-com bubble when the markets were just going through the roof. Dow 36,000 at the time was just unthinkable. What's interesting is, you know, the bubble burst in 2000, and then you fast forward 8 more years, you end up with the financial crisis, and they actually, not them, but other books are written about Dow Zero. People are, you know, predicting Dow Zero.
Doom and gloom.
Yeah. So that's what happens. You have irrational exuberance, right? You have time periods where everyone's like, oh, it's going to keep going straight up. And it just doesn't happen that way, right? The 1929 crash. No, I don't think anybody here was around. And my grandfather was around for that. He was born in 1928. His birthday was yesterday, 96 years old.
Oh. Well, did you talk about the great crash?
We did not talk about the great crash. He had only been 1 year old, so I don't know he really remembers that much about that.
Not a topic.
Economist Irving Fisher famously declared just before the stock market crash of 1929 that the stock prices had reached what looks like a permanently high plateau. The prediction came right before the crash and led into the Great Depression. Those economists.
Dumb luck.
Yes.
Fast forward, we're referenced back again to the 2008 financial crisis. Prior to the 2008 financial crisis, many analysts and economists failed to predict the collapse of the housing market and the ensuing global financial crisis. The crisis resulted in a significant drop in stock markets worldwide. We all know that. We lived through that very well. Still have the scars.
Yeah, there's just some bad financial instruments going on back then.
I was just entering into the workforce, but
were
I was
you?
In construction, so
oh.
I was out of the finance world.
Oh, that's an interesting combo.
Because of that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Well, that's actually, I graduated in 2008, so in my first job, I was in construction industry. And I was in a big project in nowhere, Alabama. So I was kind of isolated. And I came back after about a year and I was like, what is going on?
Alex breaking loose. Yeah.
That's funny. The one that we don't really follow that much, or maybe listeners remember this, but Japan's stock market in the 1980s. So during the 80s, there was a widespread belief that Japan's economy and stock market would dominate the world. Japan's stock index reached a peak in 1989. And then that all burst, leading to a prolonged period of economic stagnation. That's what I remember the most. I remember the stagnation part of that. I do remember this one, Brexit. Remember Brexit?
Oh, God.
That was going to change the world,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And Brexit was just going to, it would end up being much ado about nothing, really.
Like a lot of these events, Casey.
Right. So if you don't remember, leading to the 2016 Brexit referendum, many predictions suggested that a vote to leave the European Union would lead to an immediate and significant adverse effect in the U.S. Or in the U.K. stock markets. While there was initial volatility, the markets quickly recovered, defying many dire predictions. But yeah, I remember people said, what are the effects of the U.K. and then leaving the EU, and just
not an event.
Yeah. I think they just kind of, because you lose all your trade treaties, right? That was the big issue, but they were quickly rewritten.
Right.
They seem to be doing okay.
Yeah, they were all grown-ups. They worked it out.
Dot-com bubble predictions. So in the late 90s, I mean, everything was dot-com. I remember even seeing a U.S. Airways 737, usairways.com.
Oh,
like on the top,
God.
Right? Everybody just put .com on top of
everything. Oh, and then the value is supposed to go up.
And I kid you not, Mr. Weiser himself.
What? Wanted to add it?
You know, Weiser.com. He created some LLC and called it .com. Like it was like, oh, everything's going to be .com. We have to, you just name it .com and it was supposed to just be worth all this
return
money.
Return value.
I almost wonder if the AI... in today's world, it's similar to that. Just slap on AI onto your earnings call, and
that's true.
Your stock price goes up.
Yeah,
50%.
Well, same way for ESG. Yeah. I mean,
right.
Say you're in an ESG fund for the last 2 years, and you got extra attention and pats on the back, and
a nice positive social credit score.
Yeah, even though your fees are higher.
Yeah.
And there's nothing ESG about it. Actually, in the end.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Y2K stock market crash.
Oh, yeah.
I remember.
We're not going to know what happens when the clock turns.
That's right. I remember in 2000, and I was in Disney World for New Year's.
Oh.
And I was like, huh, we're going to be standing right here in front of the Magic Kingdom. We're going to watch this, all these fireworks, and there's going to be no lights because all the stuff just going to turn off, right? What happened?
Planes are going to fall from the sky.
Nothing.
Yeah. Computers are going to blow up.
Nothing happened.
That was great. Yeah.
This is a little more serious, and it could have happened, but Cold War fears.
True.
You know, I mean, those were not unfounded, but, thanks to, I don't know. Who do we think for that? Ronald Reagan?
I was going to say Reagan, I would say.
I'd say, yeah.
Standing strong.
The Eurozone collapse. So in the early 2010s, they were concerned that the Eurozone would collapse, leading to catastrophic consequences in global stock markets. You know, there was a lot of volatility around that, you know, not to make light of any of this. There is stock market volatility around every single one of these headlines.
Oh yeah. We're not saying that it doesn't, but nothing implodes completely.
No,
that's what I think, how clients go sometimes, like, this time is going to be really different and everything's going to blow up. And what do we do?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's the takeaway, that all these bad things, you know, we experience, but hey, everything's still here. Everybody still has long-term value in your portfolio.
I mean, everyone's fears should be, you're allowed to have fears of things. I want to discount that.
Oh yeah.
But the latest one, and I had to chuckle at it a little bit, was like, maybe we should not sell everything in the 401k because the market's usually down in January. I'm like, well, why are we worried about January? You know, because the market's always down in January. I mean, statistically, actually it's up in January.
And you're going to rebuy.
Yeah, I feel like tax loss harvesting and repositioning. There's a lot of purchasing going on in January usually. I actually just quickly Googled this, but, you know, that's pretty common to have, you know, pullbacks, sizable pullbacks throughout the year. And, you know, this one Schwab article, just stock market corrections are fairly common. Pullbacks of 10% or more have occurred in the 10 of the past 20 years. So, again, there's always volatility in the market. We just got to be able to handle it and stay the course.
Are you curious why annuities keep coming up as a potential investment option? People are often told that annuities can effectively mitigate investment risks and help secure their financial future. However, annuities often benefit the salesperson and might not be the best choice for you as a consumer. To learn more about the various types of annuities, the negatives of owning them, and better investment alternatives, we have a free ebook on our website just for you. To download our ebook, Buyer Beware, Why Do They Keep Trying to Sell You That Annuity?, simply click the link in the episode notes or visit wiserinvestor.com/guides. Now let's get back to the episode.
So yeah, another one would be like the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Obviously that was very real. It actually happened, but the stock market, you know, people selling out of the stock market was a real thing.
Yeah, the market closed, right?
It did.
I can't remember how long we closed.
It opened up positive when that reopened. I think there was some big.
Is like a big rally.
I think there were some
ringing the bell, big
some
hurrah.
big fish that made sure that the market was going to be up that day. But I don't believe it was up later.
No,
sold off. This is a big one. Obviously, we talk about that already. But political election outcomes. People think, oh man, if Trump gets in, we're screwed, or if Biden gets in, we're screwed. And I keep telling people, it just doesn't really matter.
Nope.
It doesn't really matter. There is very little correlation between stock market returns and Republican versus Democrat. And you just sound ignorant when you say it. Don't sound ignorant.
Just stay invested.
You know, or when the market goes up, you're like, I don't understand why this market keeps going up. So-and-so's in office. And I'm like, but it has anything to do with it because you're still selling Coke bottles. People are still flying on airplanes. People are still buying software. I mean, the world continues going on. This is not a dictatorship.
Half the country doesn't move. You know, as much as they say they're going to leave the country, that half stays. No matter who wins every day. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, on other big key issues like, you know, abortion or you know, social type issues. Okay. Yeah, there's some radical changes on those fronts, and that should help you decide how you vote. But economically speaking. Right. It's just really hard for one person to create a train wreck of the economy. You know, because you have the Fed.
Oh, yeah.
That's out there controlling.
Manipulating.
Right. So maybe there's some political bias there. Maybe there is. But you know what? The bias is during election years, they want it to be better to keep their guy in. OK, if that's the case, great. I'll make more money.
Everybody wins. Right. Join the ride.
So again, it's not, I'm not saying don't vote. I'm just saying that you gotta, it's not all the same. Now, if you see government taking over sectors of the economy, that's a problem. If they say, okay, we're going to take over, all home buying has to be run through the government and we decide who gets to buy and who, you know, that's a problem,
right?
If we lose our free market
energy.
Yes. Yep. Yes, exactly.
Just saying.
Right. Well, then you'd turn into like Venezuela at that point, right?
Oh, yeah, because they're winning.
Right. Yeah, that is just typically things that happen. It's like trying to, you know, people blaming, I was even at a conference. This has been a long time ago, but I was at a conference and they actually had President Bush and Bill Clinton on the stage at the exact same time.
Ooh.
It was crazy. I mean, President Bush had people just rolling with jokes and laughter and things like that. And they would try to ask him serious questions about the economy. He was so checked out. He's like, I have no idea. And Bill Clinton would always have these very thought out answers.
Yeah.
He'd studied for the job. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think George W. was there to collect the $500,000 speaking fee. But I remember just sitting behind this guy that was basically, he just kept talking to him the whole time. You know,
oh, really?
We were so far back. These guys were like dots, you know, they were like so far back. There's no way you could hear him, but he kept saying, you know, calling him Mr. Housing Crisis, Mr. You know, just blaming him for the complete meltdown. Mm-hmm. And it's like, they're just, if you trace back that financial crisis, it kind of started back when everyone thought it was a right to have a home instead of a privilege.
Mm-hmm. 3 or 4 or 5 homes.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right. So yeah, you could even trace it back to the Carter administration if you really wanted to. Just the idea of what they wanted to do. And then the Wall Street made it worse with the wrapping of everything. But there's no way a sitting president knows about any of that.
No
one did.
Mm-mm.
There's just crafty. No way that happens. This is not, it's not even logical to think that. So anyway, it just, you gotta be careful, about your assumptions, and you know, you tell yourself something long enough, you start believing it. Right. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Those are,
yeah. So you just have to not get caught up in the hype, I think, because long term, we've looked at all these events and, hey, the world bounces back. Your safety, your principal, it's still there. Might take a minor hit, but over the long run,
yeah.
How else are you going to build wealth in today's world?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think 2022 is a perfect example where everyone said there's going to be a deep recession. Everyone said that it's going to be a terrible, terrible stock year. Or I'm sorry, 23.
Going into 2023.
Yeah, 2022 going into 2023.
Oh, yeah.
And it was one of the best rate of returns we've had in the last 10 years.
S&P up over 27 or 26%.
Wow. Yeah. And people were saying, what should we do? Should we go to cash?
Yeah.
Heck no.
Right. Yeah. Now, equally, in 21, at 12/31/21, everyone was saying, oh yeah, 2022 is a chip shot. It's going to be super easy, right? It's going to be a 10% rate of return minimum.
Oh yeah. Everybody after was the big rally that. In 2021.
And then what happened on 1/1? The Fed just starts, or 1/2, the Fed came back to work and we're like, we're going to raise interest rates because inflation is a real problem, where they denied it all through, 2021. Right.
Right.
So then we had this big sell-off because of rapidly rising rates, because the Fed had to make up for their mistake. So you just don't know. But what do we learn in all that? You just stay the course. And if you go through proper planning, you shouldn't be taking losses in your portfolio. Mm-mm. Realized losses. Realized. You actually sell something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. So what do we learn in the financial crisis? We learned that, hey, cash is king. And you got to always make sure that you have plenty of cash on hand to get through a crisis, so you don't have to take losses and sell things.
Amen. Yeah. Right. So don't have any debt going into it. And then, yeah, have your cash.
Or have your debt. Have your debt manageable with cash on hand. I mean, exactly. A lot of people have mortgages.
Sure.
But
mortgages are good.
You know, and it's
bonds also, you know, they're there to help provide liquidity as well if you need to tap into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's just going through the planning process. That's why I said we're a financial planning firm first that happens to do asset management, because you have to start with a plan.
Exactly.
You just can't go invest money and then you're going to end up being out of a job, not having any cash. And what are you doing? You're liquidating your 401k, your IRA, you're paying ridiculous tax rates for it because there wasn't really this stopgap put in place. So,
yeah. I think clients are sometimes surprised when they realize that, yeah, we don't even talk about like how we would invest your assets till the very end of the process because we don't have a plan yet. So we have to build that plan to figure out how the investments would even work in terms of riskiness, volatility.
Well, understand their goals, their lifestyle needs.
Yeah. So investments are just kind of one tiny piece of that planning puzzle.
And putting together a future model for them to say, based on what you're doing, this is where you end up down the road. Mm-hmm. If you're retired, how do you stay retired?
Oh, yeah. Because I think the biggest shock for clients is when we look at that long-term cash flow sometimes to see that huge deficit number in retirement and how much is going to come out of the portfolio. And they're like, oh my God, I have to take that much out of my portfolio? And I'm like, yes, but it's fine. It all works out. You have a high probability of success. And this is why we plan. This is why you save. And this is why we're here, to see that it all works out over time.
Yeah. Unfortunately, our industry is full of people that just sell stuff.
I know.
You know, it's very sad. I don't know. It's going to take government regulation to fix it. The industry will not fix it on its own.
No.
But
yeah,
but for people who come in and say, I have a financial plan already.
Yeah, I know.
They're always crap. I look at them like, this is a time value of money calculation on a really nice piece of paper that I could have done with my TIA or what is it? The HP.
ADP. Retirement planner.
No. I'm talking about the financial calculator we all use.
Retirement calculator.
No, the one we use in college.
Oh, yeah. The
TI 80.
Yeah.
Right. Whatever. No, it's basically a fancy one of those. And it's just like, oh, this is so frustrating.
Right? Or it's 5 years old and you're like, mm-hmm. Well, did you not have it updated?
That's true. There are firms that do some more comprehensive planning, but yeah, they don't update it. They don't make it a focus of conversation each year. So, we did a plan for a year, fine. And they assume that that's just how that works going forward.
Or they're just putting a bunch of annuities.
Oh,
yeah. Or annuities. Don't even get me started on the annuity part. Jeez.
Sorry to bring it up.
I know. Really, you should have brought that up. You said the word.
There's a download on our website, why you shouldn't buy annuities. You know, I had, speaking of using fear to sell things, we have a client. It's been here a very long time, but when I met her, she came in and she put her statement down in front of me. Her husband had passed away a few years prior. Her son had referred her to us, and there was all these red circle marks on the statement. Mm-hmm. And she said, my friend from my Sunday school class wants me to buy an annuity, and she wants me to put $3 million into an annuity. And she says, my son kept saying no, but he said, come see you, because he wasn't sure why, but just the answer was no. So I came here to figure out
why
I shouldn't do this, because she had circled what the agent or salesperson had done. She had circled all the negatives, not even for the lifetime of the fund, but just for the month. And so she circled all the negative for the month in the portfolio. And she said, and she wrote on there, this would never happen with an annuity.
Oh my gosh.
And so I'm going through, and the, her husband had been more of a buy hold investor. Mm-hmm. And so the net at the very bottom is a very large number.
Oh, I bet the net gain.
Oh yeah. Because he's been in there since like the 80s. Right.
Yeah.
And he owned a lot of individual company stock where he worked. I assume there were shares that were granted and such. And so I circled that number at the bottom, and I said, neither with this.
I knew you were going to go there.
I was like, annuity is a great way to go stagnant. Just nothing good's going to happen, but nothing bad's going to happen. And in 20 years, you're going to lose all your purchasing power when you can actually get your money back out of it.
And you're going to give your Sunday school friend a really nice commission. I hope you like them.
I tried to tell her she's going to get nearly $300,000 on that sale. It's a 10% commission to the advisor. Now, I'm sure part of that was kept by her company, but still, even a 6% commission was crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Just the math just doesn't add up. And we're interviewing. So we're interviewing here at Wiser for multiple positions. And she, Missy and I were in an interview recently. And I told the guy, because he's coming from a world of annuity sales. And I said, I'm really good at math. Math doesn't add up for annuities. And he's like, oh, but let me be able to show you.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm like, there's nothing you can show me, dude.
Yeah.
I've seen it all.
He was in full sales mode.
He went into full sales mode during his interview. I'm like, that's probably not the best move. Have you looked at the website?
Yes.
Yeah.
You've done your research.
Fee only.
So let's talk about some things that people have fears of going forward. And I pulled these off of, I asked ChatGPT. I said, ChatGPT.
Oh, what are people scared of?
What are most people scared of when it comes to the stock market? And I was very surprised. I actually ran it a couple of times, asking the questions differently. And I'm like, there's a lot of scared people out there. You know what the number one was? Total collapse to zero. Like, have you met people that are concerned about going to zero?
Yeah, a couple people. And okay. I'm like, really? If that's your biggest fear, then, you know, there's bigger fish to fry. Yes. I mean, you got to worry about zombies.
Asteroid hitting the earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like prepping for food and water. I don't know. I just don't see that. I mean,
celebrities are building bunkers in 2024.
Really? So I know, right?
Find your celebrity buddy then. I mean, the market.
What I don't understand about these whole bunker things is how do you get to the bunker?
You mean down? There's a ladder.
Oh, I know how you get into a bunker. These bunkers are not in the East Coast. These bunkers are out in the Midwest somewhere.
Oh, I thought you had
somewhere in Hawaii.
They're in Hawaii. Oh, really?
I think Zuckerberg's
in Hawaii.
That doesn't seem like a good place to be underground.
That's where the
that's volcano. An island.
Volcanic. That's where the volcano is, right?
I don't think he's that smart.
Yeah.
Saying
he got lucky? Saying Zuckerberg got lucky?
No, I said he's not that smart. Okay. So anyway, yeah. So total collapse to zero. Yeah. I mean, you want
to. No. I'm still on the bunker topic.
Oh.
Now, these bunkers are like in the Midwest, right?
They're all over. Wherever you want one, you can have a bunker.
Yeah.
You could have one up in the mountains.
Like these old silos. These nuclear silos or something in the ground. But I was like, how do you get there? I mean, they're so expensive. You're probably flying on your private jet, but then
how do you do that? If there's already been like,
that's
an
what
event?
I don't understand is to me, it's gotta be in your backyard and it's like a 5-minute drill or something. But if there's like if it's like for nuclear type thing, I just don't see how you race it there in your G5.
And
what happens to the pilot? You're asking the pilot to leave their family. To take you to your bunker.
And like, what good is it if you're in your bunker and the rest of the world is dead and gone?
Yeah, I know.
That would, I don't know.
Well, this whole Russia-Ukraine thing, I did get into this deep hole one night on my computer, and I was like, like, how do you survive nuclear fallout? And I was like, you don't want to.
Yeah.
That's what I determined.
Go with it. Yeah. Yeah. Like radiation poisoning.
You don't want to. It just sounds bad.
It's not
a good thing. No. But yeah, total collapse is zero. It's going to take certainly nuclear war. And I kind of add at that point, does it really matter?
Mm-hmm.
This business doesn't matter if the whole East Coast is gone, you know?
Yeah, no.
I mean, does your cash matter? Does gold matter? Does Bitcoin matter? I don't know.
Well, that ties into the next one, end of capitalism. You know, so people are talking about, well, should I hold gold and silver bars?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, do you really think, you know, if everything is gone and money doesn't matter, you're going to be able to trade your gold bar for
right.
a loaf of bread or, you know, some milk from a cow?
I don't know.
I just don't see that working.
I remember when gold was going crazy and you could like take your gold into the mall at one of those kiosks and sell your gold to those people. I was very curious by that. We didn't have any gold to sell, but I was like, you know, what's the buy price? And he was kind of telling me, and I said, okay, well, you also had gold you could buy.
Mm-hmm.
I assume it's not the same gold people were turning in, but I think they melted or something,
yeah.
made new stuff. But then the ounce, what you're buying for, the spread is huge, like 20%, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So does that mean if you're buying a gold bar, it has to appreciate by 20% before you get back to break even? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're buying from a shop like that. Then
so if I go down to the coin store, there's a great coin store just down from our office here.
Mm-hmm.
If I went down to the coin store and I bought a gold coin,
mm-hmm.
some, you know, Lincoln or somebody on it, I don't know, JFK, whatever. That's a 20% plus markup. So how do you ever make money?
That means
when you buy those things on TV, there's no profit, you've lost money.
It's depreciated.
Yeah.
Well, I had a client whose husband who had passed had bought all kinds of gold and silver through a reputable dealer. And she asked me, well, what should I do? I said, well, I think your best bet is to go back to that dealer to see what you could get.
Yeah.
She had all the original invoices and everything, and it was about a 20% haircut.
Wow.
Wow.
Thinking this was an investment. And yeah. I had explained this is more like a hobby.
Right.
Not an investment. Yeah. So yeah. I would not recommend that.
Silver's used for manufacturing, but silver's a little different maybe. You know, there's more purpose to it, I guess, but
this was gold and silver.
Gold and silver. Mm-hmm. And she didn't make any money.
Nope.
And how long do you think she'd held it?
Oh, probably over 10 years, 10, 20 years.
Good grief.
And have you seen Costco's selling gold bars?
Really?
They are. I think
that's fear-based.
They sell out, apparently. Mm-hmm.
They sell out of gold bars at Costco.
Once they come online, they sell out.
I mean,
do you have to buy by the pallet size?
I don't know.
A pallet of gold.
Family value pack.
Value pack. One for each family member.
Okay, so the only thing we have in modern history of something like this where you have complete collapse would be the complete collapse of the USSR.
And it was
cigarettes, ammunition.
Alcohol.
And alcohol. Hard liquor, actually.
Vodka.
So those are the three things that people were trading at that particular time. So that there's your history. Is that, you know, we're pretty clean here in the U.S., I would think, but I guess we're all going to be smoking, drinking, and
good shooting. Thing you have a whiskey collection.
Yes. My whiskey collection would probably get me equivalent of $100.
Okay. A meal for Wiser. We could survive a day on Casey's whiskey collection. Awesome.
Permanent stagnation. So basically that the markets don't actually grow. That was fear number three. Oh, well, I guess we can go back to end of capitalism. I mean, that's the collapse of the U.S. where the entire world comes here for our free markets.
Yeah. So
yeah,
we control our own dollar.
The end of time.
Control our own currency. There's the benefit of no one in our own country to end capitalism.
No,
not even the billionaires.
Despite the rhetoric of some of the politicians that are.
Oh yeah.
Come out of nowhere.
This is the end of time if we don't vote correctly, whatever.
Right.
Okay.
Permanent stagnation, the economy. I don't know. I mean, we kind of went through that. It takes some big negative things to happen. 2000 to 2010 was kind of a flat time period.
Yeah.
You know, that's where like dividend investing comes in real popular, because you're at least driving income from the companies when you're not having big growth.
Oh yeah, price growth.
The yields on fixed income, investments now are that's the highest that they've been. So you're earning a good yield.
If I buy the aggregate right now, what am I yielding? What am I getting?
It's still probably like 4.5
around there. 4.5%, which means if I go out on the yield curve, it's going to be a little lower at this point, but something between probably 4 and 6 year duration. I'm getting anywhere from 4.5 to 6% probably.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah. Okay. Global synchronization of crashes. I was like, man, someone's like really specific in their worry. But basically, our global stock markets are all interconnected, and if one blows up, then they all blow up.
Do you think that means like forever or just temporarily like hacked?
Oh no, it's probably not a flash crash.
I think
it's just going dark globally. I mean, you've got to have, it's interesting because going to total collapse to zero and this one are pretty close. Like, so number one and four are pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You got to have 6,700 publicly traded companies go out of business. You're going to have 12,000 companies default on their bonds. I mean, that's a...
Yeah. I mean, how like a, could that...
I mean, I'm not going to say it's not possible.
Never say
it's
never.
It's certainly possible. All it takes is a humongous natural disaster, probably. COVID was probably the test run for something like that.
And that was like self-imposed. We didn't need to do that.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, the whole COVID thing actually was a boom for so many people. Right. I mean, the Marriott Country Club had more applicants in 2020 than ever before.
Wow.
And they had to start having tea times, where in the past there were no tea times except for Saturday.
Are you kidding me?
No, it was just, I've talked about this before on the podcast. It was the strangest time. At the time, I was on the Wellstar Foundation board, and I was getting reports like wellness reports of the community.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, I'm eating at the Marriott Country Club, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like where all these people come from? And I'm like, Cobb County had the most people ever like unable to get a meal, because you had all the service people that have layoff jobs.
Oh yeah.
And then you had all these other people that were still working, working from home, doing whatever, had all this free time all of a sudden.
Normal lives.
And so you had record number here. So I literally saw the economic divide firsthand.
Wow.
There's people who are looking for a meal, and there's people who've never made so much money in their life.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for Wiser, that was one of our biggest growth years was 2020.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's very, very eye-opening. Which is just a reminder that you have to get outside your bubble. You have to look around, and there are people who need help that you should help. I'm not talking about the homeless druggie.
No.
I'm talking about real people. There's real people.
Hardworking Americans.
That get used at hand, and we need to find them and help them up. Unilateral control by a single entity. I thought that was kind of funny way of saying one world government.
Yeah.
But someone, in this study or at least by ChatGPT and what they found in studies out there, were concerned about the whole world merging as one, and
like Dr. Evil taking over.
I guess so.
Klaus Schwab or
Charles Schwab. Right, exactly.
No, Klaus Schwab.
Who you talking about?
The leader of the World Economic Forum.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right. I was thinking Charles Schwab because all their acquisitions, they're just going to acquire all the financial companies where they control everything.
Or Wiser just dominates the world.
Right. This is my evil plan.
Mm-hmm.
Elimination of all risk. So that's the idea that risk can be completely eliminated from the stock market, right?
Oh.
So investing in markets inherently involves risk. And so risk can be managed or mitigated. It cannot be entirely eliminated. I still don't understand that one. Like, I'm not going to invest anything because if all the risk goes away, then...
Yeah, there's no free lunches.
Yeah.
And investing in, like, everything still doesn't eliminate all the risk.
Right.
Because then you're just having all the risk.
Last one, number 7, permanent loss of public trust. So basically people just don't trust the system anymore.
I think there's a little bit of that, I'm surprised still at seven. You have to trust the system.
I'm surprised at seven. I thought that'd be number two or
three.
Because I feel like I talk to a lot of people that don't trust the government. Yeah. Especially with light of things that have happened in the last couple of administrations, you're just kind of like,
oh, weaponizing
maybe
the government.
Maybe there is a, and we're not being told the truth about everything.
Right.
I'll just put it that way. Again, I don't know. I mean, these are all legitimate fears. You don't want to discount any of those fears. I just come back to, okay, well, what's happened? And when you look at it, the S&P 500, and you look at over even in 10-year segments, heck, even in 3-year segments, it has mostly positive upward trends. I mean, the worst thing that ever happened over 10 years is you broke even. That's the worst thing that's ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
What's worst thing that's ever happened over 20 years, I think, is a 5% gain each year. Worst thing to happen in a 1-year period is like 60% loss. So you can't invest for 1 year.
No. And we tell all our clients that, I mean, if you need your money in the short term, the market is not the place to park it.
Heck, you can get 5.2% on a Charles Schwab money market right now. That's bigger than the US Treasury. So why the heck would you go invest money when you need it in 12 months when you can get a 5.2% rate of return?
You don't.
Exactly. You don't do that.
No.
Yeah. I don't know. There's always going to be people out there who are just fearful. I think education solves a lot of that.
Right.
Which is why you have so many annuity sales. Why people buy index annuities and variable annuities are usually they're buying it for tax shelter. Index annuities are the ones people buy when they're scared, but it's just, you have to be educated. And that's part of our process as advisors. We have to educate our clients who want to be educated. Mm-hmm. Some people just walk in and go, here, just deal
take
with this.
My money. Right. And do I don't want to worry about it.
Right.
You worry about it.
Which is probably the best situation. Not watching CNBC every minute of the
You're
day.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, well, CNBC's entertainment. That's not really news.
Yeah. Or day trading.
Or day trading. Yeah. You're getting your economic analysis from Jim Cramer. He has really good comments, but you know, the bye 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 and all the flashing lights and you know, it's entertainment. You know, everyone thinks that there's a secret sauce to investing, and the secret sauce, if there is one, is to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. Stay the course. Keep it simple.
Yep. Stay invested.
If you don't understand it, don't invest in it. And keep your costs low, focus long-term. How many people beat the S&P 500 over 20 years? 2%. Wow. 2% of active managers beat the S&P 500 or any index that they're assigned to, not just the S&P. If it's a growth mutual fund, only 2%, actually less than 2%, it's actually less than 0.5% beat the index over a 20-year period.
So, how are you going to find that? For every asset category, that less than
2%. No, you can't.
Mm-mm.
You can't. The guy's probably retired on the beach somewhere.
Well, yeah, if he did that.
So you have to keep it simple. This is why we focus on the planning side, because there's so many other things you can control.
Mm-hmm.
Your cash savings. Are you properly insured?
That's right? The biggest thing, like risk exposure.
Yeah.
You saved all this money, but...
Right. If you have an accident and you're at fault and you didn't buy an umbrella policy for $245 a year, right? There's a good chance you could lose some of it in a lawsuit, right?
Oh, yeah.
What about estate planning even? It's like you saved all this money, but then you lost it to estate tax because you didn't plan properly or you made a mess of it.
Yeah, so it's going through probate. You didn't want it to
Next generation challenges each other on how much they should be getting. And you didn't put easy provisions to prevent that from happening. I mean, there's just so many other angles as planners that we focus on that don't show up in rate of return or things of that nature, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah. It'd be so easy if it was just investments.
We're independent advisors. We can buy anything for anybody.
Oh, in their portfolios. Right. Absolutely. Yeah.
We have unlimited choices, but yet we choose simplicity because it's what wins. I hate losing. I hate losing with a passion. Mm-hmm. I hate it's losing so much that all I can think about is how do I win? Right. So because of that, that's what I don't understand. I said, we get new clients every week, probably 4 to 6 come through here every week. And you see some of these portfolios that other firms are doing, and you're just like, why are you trying to justify your paycheck?
Yeah.
You got expenses over 1%. You've got
a load that you paid of 5.75%.
4.25 is bad. So there's so much that is a part of the planning process. Tax efficiency. It's like, why are advisors not recommending more people not roll their money to them, but roll it into their 401k plan so they can do backdoor Roths?
Oh, I know.
Right.
Well, we know why, because they want the assets under management.
Yeah.
And we do what's best for the client. Say, no, we don't need your assets. It's better for you, Mr. Client, to put it in your current 401k.
The state of our industry is really sad, but it's because most firms are out there selling, but I digress on that. Bottom line is there are a lot of things to be fearful of, and fear should never be the policy setter for your portfolio. That's what it comes down to.
No. What's it? The only thing to fear is fear itself.
That's right.
Yes.
How profound.
I think someone said that before you, but yes.
Oh, really? Like someone presidential.
Right. Good theme for 24, though. But anyway, let's wrap this up. And it's always good to have the world's best financial planner and the king of data on the podcast every episode. So
Thanks, Casey.
See you guys next time.
See ya.
Right before we go, don't forget that we have a YouTube channel called A Wiser Retirement. There we have a couple of videos of financial habits to avoid in retirement, which are linked here in the show notes. Pitfalls of living rich but not building wealth. I love that little episode. That's available on YouTube. Also, podcast episodes 181, 5 Common Financial Myths Debunked. And episode 141, What is Holistic Financial Planning? You might be interested in those. Thanks for listening to today's episode. If you're interested in learning more about Wiser Wealth Management or want to schedule a consultation to meet with one of our very best fiduciary financial advisors, you can do so by going to wiserinvestor.com. Click on the schedule now. You can book a time with us. And also, you can click on the episode notes to get there as well. Thanks so much. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to A Wiser Retirement Podcast. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe wherever you're listening. That way you don't miss any new episodes. We'd also appreciate if you could leave a rating and review. If you have any questions about anything that was discussed today, head to wiserinvestor.com and reach out.
This episode was produced by Edward Resendez.
This podcast is strictly for informational purposes only and is not to be considered as investment advice or a solicitation to buy or sell any financial products, securities, digital assets, or any other investment vehicles, or a basis to make any financial decisions. Wiser Wealth Management Incorporated is a registered investment advisor with the SEC. The host and or guest may personally own securities, digital assets, or other investment vehicles mentioned on this podcast. Neither the host nor guest of the show are compensated for their participation, and no referral fees are paid to or received by any host or guest for clients, listeners, or similar interests. Investments involve risk, and unless otherwise stated, are not guaranteed. Be sure to first consult with a qualified financial advisor, tax professional, insurance professional, and or legal professional before implementing any strategy discussed herein. Past performance is not indicative of future performance.